on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and today is Monday, September 22nd, 2025. Now, if you are good at math, or really if you just look at a calendar, you're well aware there are only 6 trading days remaining in this quarter. So suffice it to say, the fourth quarter is coming upon us pretty quickly, which means before you know it, it'll be 2026. And so with regards to the stock market and your portfolios, now is not the time to lose focus. Now here at Invest Talk, Justin and I have one mission, and that is that each and every day you leave this show a better and more informed investor. We want to help you understand the market dynamics, what is going on, and most importantly, how all of those things might affect your portfolio and therefore your financial lives. Now, in order to do that, we have a bit of a recipe that we adhere to on this show. We have the common ingredients, our main focus point, our talking points. We go over the market. But the thing that really spices up this show is you, your finance and investment questions via voicemail, calling through live, or leaving them over on our YouTube channel. Now, in just a bit, I'm going to talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering how you guys think about the stock RR, Rich Tech Robotics Incorporated. It looks like their stock's been doing really good these past 3 months, up about, looks like 190%. Give me a update. Maybe see if this is a good stock to invest in. Thank you. Bye.
Taking a look at RR, which is Rich Tech Robotics, it is, you guessed it, a robotics technology company. It has a bit of a wide array of types of industries where it offers robotic automations. It has its server assistant robots, so technology. It has hospital delivery robots, so the medical space. It has heavy duty internal transport through its Titan segment. So you're talking about your industrial space. They also have Skylark for hotels as well as the development of some cleaning robots. Now, over the past 3 months, this stock has been on quite a run, up 209.5%, up 623% in the past 52 weeks, up 105% year to date. It is now a $703 million market cap company, has a little bit of debt, $356 million worth of debt. But you know what? Its revenue is growing, but it is still a negative money prospect, right? It's not making any money. Its net margin this year projected to be minus 335%. So why is it up a lot? Well, it had its name included in a couple indices, Russell 2000, Russell 3000. Obviously, systematic buying is going to happen from there. They have a $4 million agreement, that's million with an M, not billion with a B, to expand its reach to the Asian market. Over the past 6 months, you know, you have seen high volatility. You have seen a bit of climb in revenue that is, you know, relatively, or not a bit of a climb in revenue, but a bit of revenue, which is, you know, still further off from where they were in 2023, down from $8.7 billion to $4.2 billion in 2024. And so at the same time, something that maybe you should be concerned about is, well, they are seeing, yes, a climb in stock price. What do smart companies that don't have profits do in times like these? They issue shares. And this company has done that as well. So, you know, taking a look at this, you've got to be worried about the dilution if you are an investor. It's trading at a pretty crazy expensive multiple too, 131 times price to forward-looking earnings. So what do you want to watch for going forward? Well, their next earnings report is in December. Can they continue to grow revenue in terms of their projection, right? Even though they fell from 2023, already projected to grow into 2024, our margin's going to become more reasonable. And, you know, overall, what is the competition space like? Now, for me, as a long-term investor, somebody who tends to stay away from the companies that don't make money because, historically speaking, in aggregate, those tend to underperform, I would probably stay away from Rich Tech Robotics in spite of this run-up you've seen. That is Rich Tech Robotics, ticker RR. Thanks for the call. Looks like we have our first live call of the week from our friend George in San Mateo, listening on AM 1220. You're asking about BKLC. Do you own it? Are you looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it. Just to put things in context,
yeah.
I'm a passive index fund investor.
Okay.
And I've been looking. I found that ETF earlier this year, and it seemed like a dream come true. There's zero expense ratio. You get quarterly dividends, and it's just a generic large cap index fund, and that's what I really like. So I was wondering if you see any flags or any issues with it.
Well, let's take a look at it now. BKLC is the BNY Mellon U.S. Large Cap Equity ETF. As expected, you're looking at your market capitalization. 99.58% of the fund is in large caps, which is exactly what there is supposed to be. Now, it does say there is a 0% expense ratio, and that is true. BKLC genuinely has a 0% expense ratio. You know, interestingly enough, sometimes what you see is something called a fee waiver, right? And so the prospectus ratio will be X percentages, X basis points, and there'll be a temporary fee waiver. Now, this isn't exactly what is happening here, right? There's no temporary promotion, no waiver. It actually is a zero expense ratio fund. Now, is it a loss leader? Probably. Kind of like those Costco rotisserie chickens. It gets you in the door. You get into your suite of BNY, you know, Mellon funds. Now, you're a passive investor. It doesn't mean you're going to start only investing in BNY, you know, core equity ETFs now. But if you're trying to get large cap exposure, I mean, it's a $4 billion fund. Its sector weighting is pretty closely tracking the MSCI USA Large Cap Index. So it's closely tracking its benchmark. Its yield is about the same. Its price to book looks about the same. Everything looks like it's doing a good job tracking this. Now, let me just do a little quick read here and see how they decide what's in here. It looks like it tracks an index of the top 500 corporations initially. Yeah, I mean, it looks like it's pretty much just doing it based on market cap here, free float market cap. They're not doing anything crazy here. Honestly, it looks to me like if you're trying to get large cap exposure and you want to do it for zero expense ratio in an ETF, pretty solid way to do it. Not seeing a lot of red flags here. Thanks for the call, George. Have a wonderful Monday. Now, moving into a break. On the other side, we'll preview today's topics and look at today's market activity. Be like George. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar. Beyond the Mag 7, how to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are going to help you move past the familiar names to identify the key opportunities for investment in the real AI revolution. They'll be talking about the energy grid, data center infrastructure, and how AI is boosting profits in a wide range of industries. The all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, happening online September 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com. There's value in every InvestTalk podcast, so call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
You know your business inside and out. Gusto knows payroll, compliance, and benefits as well, so you don't have to. Sounds like a match made in heaven, right? Gusto is online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. It's all in one, remote friendly, and incredibly easy to use, so you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Gusto helps you save time with automated tools built right in, offer letters, onboarding materials, direct deposit, and more. Automatic payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k, you name it. Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. Get direct access to certified HR experts to help support you through any tough HR situation. It's quick and simple to switch to Gusto. Just transfer your existing data to get up and running fast. Plus, Don't pay a cent until you run your first payroll. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/investtalk and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/investtalk. One more time, gusto.com/investtalk.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
We've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you all today. My main focus point concerns this topic, the retirement generation gap, boomers versus Gen X. In this segment, we will break down the contrasting retirement strategies and financial mindsets of baby boomers and Gen X to uncover key lessons for your financial future. Also, we'll touch on how markets have hit yet another record high. FOMO is everywhere. So what are the risks out there? What should you be cognizant of? We'll also touch on something I tried to talk about twice last week, but we didn't have much time. A surge in imports into Southern California ports abruptly finishing as the pre-Liberation Day front running seemingly has come to an end. Should we have time at the end of the show, a hot topic over the weekend, the $100,000 H-1B visa fee. The administration saying it might help U.S. workers. Economists are saying we are not so sure about that. And should we have time, or we will have time, of course, to answer your finance and investment questions, including one on Accenture PLC, ticker ACN, and another on Roth IRAs, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and hopefully more live calls throughout the show. Talk a little bit about the market today before we go any further into this program. U.S. stocks a bit higher, ending near best levels. S&P, NASDAQ, Dow extending those Friday record closes we saw. Russell 2000 just below its last Thursday record close, which was, I think, the first record close it had in quite some time, obviously on the back of rate cuts, cheaper debt financing. That's going to primarily help out some of those smaller companies. From a sector perspective, big tech mixed. Apple doing pretty well. Nvidia, the two standouts from that group. Other outperformers, semis, biotech names, casual diners, cruise lines, rails, hospitals, managed care, and utilities. Underperformers on the day included home builders, airlines, hotels, casinos, department stores, credit cards, and regional banks. The bond side, Treasuries looking a bit weaker. Touch of curve flattening out there. The yield's up about 2 to 4 basis points across that duration spectrum across the curve. At the same time, dollar index down 30 basis points on the day. Gold finishing at yet another record close, up nearly 2% at 1.9% today. And crude oil ended down about 20 basis points. So what really inspired yet another strong day? Well, we're seeing a bit of pickup in M&A activity, certainly a good for financials, good for markets broadly. That AI secular narrative very much still intact. We got a notice that NVIDIA is going to invest up to $100 billion in OpenAI to boost some of their database investments. We also have seen, you know, a bit of tailwinds from Fed easing, continually avoiding a recession, the stronger than expected U.S. economy. And positioning and sentiment really does support a bit of further upside. We're seeing the rally broaden as well. Market still continuing to ignore the elevated risk of a government shutdown and some geopolitical tensions that are rising. But there's still a bit of caution out there, right? You're seeing divergent Fed expectations, a lot of moving pieces around H-1B visa fees, what that might do to tech companies, what that might do to medical companies. And overall, you know, a little bit of caution. We're approaching quarter end. We're approaching a part of September that historically has not done particularly well, a part of the year where things start to slow down. There's a growing focus on a more aggressive rate cut path, and if that'll even happen, as well as the lagged impact of tariffs, which we're likely to start to feel closer towards the end of the year. Now, on the macro side, no major economic data releases really scheduled for today. Tuesday brings the S&P Global U.S. Flash Manufacturing and Services PMIs along with comments from Fed's Bowman and Bostic. We're also going to get Fed Chair Jerome Powell to speak on the economic outlook at the Greater Providence Chamber of Commerce just past noon Eastern tomorrow. New home sales. And what else happening tomorrow? New home sales out on Wednesday. More Fed speak on Wednesday as well. Thursday brings trade balances, wholesale inventories, and the third release of Q2 GDP durable goods orders, claims, and existing home sales. And personal consumption index and spending report, the highlight on Friday, with the focus being on PCE inflation, as well as the final University of Michigan consumer sentiment for September. Also will be on the calendar some more Fed speakers. Big week for Fed speak this week. Now, we might not have time to fully answer this question, but we can at least give it a little bit of a start. And this question comes in from SSJ Baller from our YouTube comment section question bank. Because every day now we receive questions and comments over there on our YouTube channel where we offer unique content, not just what we give you on this podcast broken apart into a different form, but lessons, green, you know, evergreen lessons on finance, on personal finance, on investing, webinars, all sorts of videos. And while you're over there, if you have a question, you can certainly leave it in the comment section of our question bank or comment section of any of those videos, and we'll pick it up. This one about KGC and SSRM. It says, thanks for all of these informative videos. What are your thoughts on KGC and SSRM? And are they still decently valued, even though they've run up appreciate the assessment? Well, let's look at what these companies are before we head to a break. Then we'll answer this question once we get back. KGC Capital LLC is, drum roll please, as my internet is being a little slow. It is a venture capital firm founded in, it looks like a private firm. So let's take a look actually at the other one first, SSRM. SSRM is SSR Mining Precious Metals, a gold company, assets all over the place. And an interesting thing given how gold has run up. So we'll talk about these two companies, what might be right for this commenter, what might be an interesting company for you to look at. We're moving into a break, still to come. My main focus point, more answers to your questions, and hopefully some more live calls. 888-99-CHART is the number. Can't wait to hear from you.
...2025 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Before the break, we were talking about a KGC and SSRM. I looked at the wrong KGC, but you know what? I found the right one, and the question makes sense now because KGC is Kinross Gold Corporation, so just like SSRM, involved in the precious metals mining space. So let's take a look at these two companies. Well, they certainly differ on size. KGC, $28.5 billion. SSRM, $4.6 billion. Revenue, about $6 billion to $1 billion. Operating earnings, about $3.8 billion to $349 million. So they definitely differ on size here. The larger one also has a bit of a lower price to earnings, about 18 and a half times forward-looking price to earnings, while having $1.1 billion in cash and $1.2 billion in debt. So net cash, practically zero. On the other hand, the other name has net cash practically zero as well, $438 million versus debt of $357 million. They're both up consistently year-to-date. Pretty big. KGC up 155%, SSRM up 215%. And so the question becomes, you know, where might you want to choose between these two names? One is smaller, one has smaller scale, one has specific assets with a lot of upside. They've been acquiring things recently. That's SSRM, a lot of growth potential. The other is larger. It has more scale, more mines, larger production base, a more diversified operation. It comes down to what you are really looking for. If you're looking for stability, you prefer lower risk, more stability, somewhat cheaper valuation, still great returns, probably going to want to go with the larger company, KGC. If you want to have a little bit more risk in your portfolio, potentially higher returns, you expect gold prices to stay high and increase dramatically, which they very well may, given the conditions that we have out there in the market and what has been driving them thus far, well, then SSRM would be a good place to go because of its growth strategy, because of its acquisitions, because it likely has a bit more upside. Either way, both companies seem like a decent way to play the gold trend, and certainly gold has been trending ever higher. Let's talk a little bit about retirement, namely the retirement gap and how boomers are differing a bit from what we, what we saw with boomers is differing a bit from what we are seeing with Gen X. Now, nobody likes to hear, sorry about this, that they're becoming their parents, but Gen X may be inheriting habits without copying baby boomers' retirement playbook, right? Baby boomers, about 69 million people in that generation, entered the workforce with pensions, stability, while contrast that with Gen X, which is about 65 million people, a big shift away from defined benefit plans to defined contribution plans, your 401ks, taking on a bit more debt, a bit more volatility in markets when they enter the workforce. And so this is a pretty big structural shift. And that's left Gen X with more responsibility for saving themselves, often less confidence, therefore, that they'll be able to spend into their retirement. And that's not just me saying this, right? Surveys are backing this up. Only 60% of Gen X feels on track, and 63% fear they will outlive their savings. What was that for boomers? About 68% of boomers who felt confident. That doesn't sound like much of a difference. It's only 8%, but that's a pretty big change. That's over a 10% difference on a relative basis. And the mindset is a bit different too. Gen X is more do-it-yourself, researching online, using robo-advisors, while boomers more lean towards trusting advisors or friends with managing their assets. Now, what can explain this? Well, there's a big technological divide. Certainly, Gen X embraced E-Trade, robo-advisors early, Robinhood, invest in your phone. Boomers, though, primarily getting access through traditional channels. Now, when it comes to Social Security, boomers remain a bit more optimistic that it'll last in their lifetimes. But they've got a long way to go if you're in Gen X, right? Gen X doubts it, which ironically pushes them to save a bit more. Now, when it comes to investing, Gen X, interestingly enough, even though they have more time, is the more conservative cohort. They keep larger cash balances, and they plan a bit more cautiously. Boomers, meanwhile, have benefited from strong market returns, housing appreciation, low debt, and that has left them more willing to spend now. Now, both generations like the idea of a phased retirement, though, for different reasons. Boomers, they want the flexibility. Gen X needs a bit more income, both of them thinking that they will work far beyond that age of 65. And so the sandwich generation dynamic weighs pretty heavily on Gen X as it stands. They're balancing care for kids, but they're also balancing the care for their aging parents, a large group with a large amount of wealth, while trying to save for their own financial future. In the end, right, both groups want the same thing. Everybody wants the same thing. Being able to rely on your own financial self, being healthy, having not just a happy retirement, but a long retirement. But all of those things include costs. And given the dynamics that have affected each generation, what they grew up in, what the world looked like, what market returns were, how expensive everything was and is now, the paths for those two generations, and frankly for generations, successive generations, Gen Y, Gen X, could not be more different. Now we're going to do a quick break. Please remember, you can call anytime. It doesn't have to be during the show. We are open 24/7, and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank or over on our YouTube channel or over on our iPhone iTunes review page or via email. And if you're listening on our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Have you ever had a breakthrough moment working on something that wouldn't let you stop thinking until you got to the bottom of it? I bet you've experienced that situation more than once. Let me tell you how we use Claude. We use Claude to build widgets on our website and to build a data dashboard using data from various information sources. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. Claude doesn't just give us answers. It helps us think through the problem. Claude's internal and external research capabilities go way deeper than basic web search. Think comprehensive, reliable analysis with proper citations for clients, turning hours of research into minutes. For example, Claude found connections across 50-plus sources that we never would have spotted ourselves. With Claude AI, you can connect to your work tools and data, create custom workflows, and benefit from extended thinking mode that maintains context and understanding throughout extensive conversations. Claude is for everyone: financial services, education, AI agents, and coders. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, claude.ai/invest. That's claude.ai/invest right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. That includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/invest.
The all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, Beyond the Mag 7, how to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Join Justin and Luke as they talk about the energy grid, data center infrastructure, and how AI is boosting profits in a wide range of industries. The InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, September 30th, 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Online seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com.
Hi, InvestTalk. I'm calling in with a question on Accenture. The symbol is ACN, and wanted to get your opinion, what your thoughts are on the outlook, and wanted to see what would be a good entry point. So thanks for the show, and I'll be listening for the answer.
Accenture, ACN, is a global professional services company. They're a business consulting firm. Got a couple friends that work. They're pretty solid company overall from an employee perspective. It is a $149 billion market cap company, so very large. It's got about $8 billion in debt, so not overly levered there. They consistently buy back shares. Got a 2.4% dividend yield. Cash flow, which was flat for a couple years, started to trend upward and improve. And at the same time, valuations have come down quite a bit, sitting at 17.3 times forward-looking earnings, about 2.2 times sales, about near their average over the past 5 years. From a revenue perspective, revenue growth has certainly slowed a little bit, right? They're averaging about 8.5% on an annualized basis over the past 5 years, achieving slightly under that in that projection from 2024 to 2025. Though, you know, from 2023 to 2024, they did barely grow at all. And so year to date, they're down 31%, down almost 16% in the past 3 months, down 28% over the past 52 weeks. And so what's really driving this performance is, well, yeah, you're beating on revenue, but bookings are continuing to decline. Your revenue growth is steady, but it's certainly not improving. There's a bit of a lack of implementation of some of the initiative related to AI that they said they were going to start to implement in the past year or so. And again, you know, one big issue for them as well is that a lot of their business is government focused, and you've had some government spending headwinds. Now, in spite of this, margins pretty stable, right? Sitting at about 11.2% net margin, 17.7% EBITDA margin, supposed to expand again to about 19% EBITDA margin and 11.7% net margin, respectively. So profitability, I mean, it's not really improving that much. So from a total return perspective, although returns have been bad, right? They're buying back shares. That's certainly good. But I think the reason why the stock is underperforming its industry by about 25% is because of that makeup of business versus government contracts. How much growth has slowed down, and then also, you know, bookings declining overall. And so it's not really much telling me that that's going to turn around in the short and near term. So I think for now, I'd probably stay away. This is a clear downtrend heading back about 12 months, becoming more and more evident through 2025. That is Accenture PLC, ticker ACN. Let's make it two in a row. This question from 888-99-CHART.
I'm 25, just opened a Roth IRA, and already have my own portfolio on TD Ameritrade made up of about 30 different stocks. I wanted to know what you guys would recommend for the Roth IRA, whether I should go the same route and use the same percentages in my current portfolio, or if I should go a different route and invest in ETFs such as mid-cap, small-cap, value, or the S&P 500. I also wanted to know if you guys would recommend contributing the max each year to the Roth. Looking forward to hearing your answer. Thanks.
Great question. So yeah, if you can, if you are in the income bracket that allows you to, a Roth IRA can be an excellent tool. Now, a traditional IRA, you are putting pre-tax dollars in, it grows tax-free, and then when you withdraw it later on, you pay taxes on it. Now, a Roth IRA, you put after-tax money into, it grows tax-free, you are not taxed when it comes out. Now, you may be saying, okay, that sounds great, that sounds much better. Now, that being said, math-wise, if you have the exact same tax rate today and in the future, there is no difference in terms of what your return is going to be after taxes, just because that's how math works. But if you anticipate having a higher tax rate down the road, well, then a Roth IRA can be an excellent way to pay your taxes now, have it grow tax-free, and not have to worry about it later on. Now, the benefit of having both, if you can, and not everybody can, at least contribute without doing it back to a Roth, is that you have tax diversity. In a Roth IRA, you can take out your contributions without penalty because they are after-tax contributions. Whereas in a traditional IRA, you cannot. And so you have that added ability. That's why it's always good to have different types of accounts, your Roth, your traditional, your brokerage account, for that tax flexibility. And so if you can contribute the max to your Roth IRA, absolutely. Should you be owning the same things in there? I would think of it as one whole portfolio between your traditional IRA and your Roth IRA. And the things that you can really benefit from, being in a Roth IRA is something that's going to grow more exponentially, more growthy names, given that when you withdraw it, you're not paying taxes. And think of all the things that you can benefit on not having to pay taxes down the road. And that's what you really want to allocate to your Roth. Well, the other things are allocated towards your traditional IRA. Now, would I own the exact same percentages in the exact same securities? No, absolutely not. Again, what makes most sense from a tax perspective to put in one versus the other is a good way to think about it. Great question. Thanks for the call. Now, I don't have to tell you that once again, stocks are starting to surge to fresh records, right? The S&P 500 up more than 14%, NASDAQ up more than 17% this year. Even small caps are starting to join the rally. We're seeing a bit of breadth widening as the Fed starts to initiate its latest cuts. Now, will they continue to cut? Who knows? Nobody can predict. More likely than not, we start to see some more easing. But either way, it's been a bit of a boon to the stock markets. Borrowing costs for U.S. companies have started to collapse as well, right? Investment grade spreads are actually below 0.8 percentage points. What does that mean? Well, that's the difference between your investment grade bond and the cost of a safer financing. And so that's very tight. Credit spreads are very tight, the tightest since 1998. And so, there is essentially this thought out there that it's really, you've never been paid less to take on risk than you are now, as every asset class is priced in a way that seems to be the case. And so the paradox is a bit glaring. Geopolitical risks are rising across the world. There's a trade war that is biting every now and then, uncertainty about tariffs, input costs. Markets don't really care. They've not cared. They've been brushing aside the cracks. And it's not just an American thing. It's not just U.S. markets. The MSCI All Country World Index, also at all-time highs. Emerging markets are outperforming after years of poor performance. In Europe, corporate borrowing costs have in some cases fallen below government debt. I don't know what else could tell you that valuations are a bit stretched. And so there's a lot of people out there that are understandably uneasy. A lot of financial professionals who see these very tiny credit spreads and small caps at all-time highs as pretty mystifying, given how volatile the U.S. economy has been, how some data over the past year with respect to the labor market is worse than what we perceived it to be, and that costs, especially energy costs, seem to be on the rise again. Now, market concentration adds another layer of risk here. A lot of what has driven markets higher, your NVIDIAs, your Alphabets, has been one theme, AI, and a handful of giants are dominating the gains, leaving little room for error, right? If you have a broad market that is performing well, if you have a broad market performing well because of many different themes that are driving it, many different macro factors, if one of those fail, then the market doesn't drop off as much. But if most of, and this has been the case, most of the gains have been concentrated in a handful of stocks, if what our perception is of AI changes, that could lead to a dramatic pullback. And so you see these valuations as a bit extreme in some areas, not all areas, but some areas, against a backdrop of slowing jobs, of sticky inflation, of frankly historic levels of concentration. So naturally, there are some comparisons to the dot-com era. Today's environment, in a way, you know, this guy from GQG Partners I saw called it dot-com on steroids, fueled by this AI mania. Now, what has really driven this? And you saw it post-Liberation Day. You saw it in April. What has driven a lot of this is retail buying. It has never been easier for somebody to purchase stock. Retail buying, dip buying momentum, tariff reprieves, blockbuster tech earnings within this focused area. This has all really driven markets higher. So moving forward, it'll be interesting to see what happens relative to expectations. Futures markets are expecting 4 more cuts in the next year. 4 more cuts. If inflation starts to peak, if it starts to return rather, and the labor market starts to stabilize, we could manifest far fewer than 4 cuts. Remember, a few months or a few years ago, they thought there were going to be 7 cuts in 2025. Didn't necessarily happen. So understanding that market pricing is, and market price action is really predicated upon what happens versus what we expected to happen, can hopefully help guide you at a time when valuations seem rather high. Let's go with another YouTube comment section question. This one on income ETFs. It says, how do you feel about income ETFs from NEOS funds? So we're talking about QQQI, SPY-I, all of these income funds. Well, let's take a look at one of these, and we'll just do SPY-I. SPY is the NEOS S&P 500 income or high income ETF. It is a $5 billion fund, got about a 68 basis point expense ratio. What they do is they hold the individual stocks in the S&P 500, then they do a call spread strategy. So what they're trying to do is generate high monthly income through not just the dividends from the stocks, but also the premium from selling those SPX call options. You know, we have a strategy that is similar. It's a covered call strategy. So we hold individual stocks, and then at the same time, we write calls on those stocks. You get that premium income. Effectively, what that's going to do is it's going to cap your upside, right? Because either you got to roll, there's a cost of rolling, or you get that called away. You get the stock called away. But it's also going to protect you on the downside quite a bit, right? A lot of these covered call funds in 2022, and our strategy included, did really well at a time when the market was down double digits. And so this behavior can be good for two things: as a hedge against the downside, and also if you want income. Now, one of the unfortunate things here is tends to generate a bit of capital gains. And when you buy an ETF and do it, you don't necessarily have losses to offset some of these, right? We talked about this when we did our webinar on custom indexing, direct indexing, which is a strategy that we offer for our clients, is if you own an S&P 500 ETF, and the S&P 500 is up over 14% this year, not every stock in it is going to be up 14% this year. And so the benefit of doing a custom index, direct indexing, where you own the individual stocks or some of them in the S&P versus the ETF itself, is that you can mimic that return, but that you can also get some of the losses. Because again, not all stocks within an index are going to be positive any given year. Similar thing here is you're getting a lot of tax implications without getting some of the tax benefits of having those individual holdings. And so when you're paying 68 basis points for an income fund where you're getting a lot of taxes thrown at you, I don't know. I've always been one of the opinion that if you're looking to do something like a covered call strategy, it's best to own the individual stocks in there rather than trying to do it on an ETF-wide basis just because the tax implications can be a bit gnarly. But if you don't mind it, if you don't mind the taxes, certainly any of these funds are a good way to generate income. Like I said, very similar to a covered call strategy. Swing back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in earlier from New York.
Hey, Justin. Hey, Luke. This is Bruce from New York. I hope you both are well. I was looking at something different and came across CALF, C-A-L-F, which is the Pacer U.S. Small Cap Cash Cows. Please tell me what you think. Have a great day. Bye.
CALF is very similar to another ETF, which I think the ticker is COWS. Let me check real quick. That would make perfect sense. Yeah, so, and they're both by Pacer. They are both cash cow ETFs. COWS is the large cap version, right? It's the Pacer 100. This is the small cap version. So what they do is they look at the small cap space and they use the S&P Small Cap 600. Now, I could go for 30 minutes on index construction, but the highlight of the S&P 600, it's chosen by committee. So there are some names in there that are not necessarily small caps, but generally they do fit the small cap guidelines. Now, within there, what they're going to do is they're going to take a look at trailing 12-month free cash flow yield. They're going to look at other profitability metrics as well. And they're just going to choose the stocks that are the highest in terms of cash. They are cash cows. Each name is going to be capped at 2%. So you see that a lot of names, you know, United Airlines, Expedia, Fox Corporation, nothing really higher than 2%. They got about 198 holdings, pretty well diversified. Your math tells you the top 10 must be around 20%, and you are correct. But again, 13% large caps, 63% mid caps, 21% small caps. I like the idea of emphasizing profitability, cash flow, all of these things. But, this is not a small cap fund. This is not a small cap fund. Only 21% of it is in small cap. So if you want a more broad fund that tilts towards mid caps, that emphasizes cash flow, this is a good way to do it. If you're looking for a small cap fund, this is not that. That is CALF, CAF, Pacer US Small Cap Cash Cows ETF. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Greer. We have one goal here to help you achieve your financial freedom, and our work continues after our final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
For investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Just kind of wanted your take on FIW. I'm looking to maybe add more to my position. I read an article recently that actually water was one of the best performing sectors over the long haul that is non-tech. Like I said, just kind of wanted your take on it. And in your opinion, I'm looking to add, and is that a wise move? Thank you for taking the call. I enjoy listening to you.
You know, I think this is the second call about FIW we've gotten, at least in the past couple of weeks, that is the first trust water ETF. Now, FIW holds 36 of the largest U.S. listed water companies. They rank it by market cap and weight it equally within five tiers. Now, it has about 37 holdings. The top 10% makes up about 40% of the portfolio. From a market cap basis, it's about 50-50 large cap to mid caps. Overall, what it's doing is it's tracking the ISE Clean Edge Water Index, primarily looking at water infrastructure, purification and filtration, meters, pipelines, pumps, valves, ancillary water services. And it's done pretty well, right? It's pretty solid returner over the past 10 years, 15.54% on an annualized basis. There's a bit of regulatory policy tailwinds, new infrastructure from last year on funding aimed at water system treatment plants. Interest rates hopefully coming down quite a bit means lower borrowing costs at a time when over the past couple of years, right, higher borrowing costs have put a little bit of a dampen on infrastructure projects. Now, performance overall probably driven by favorable sentiment around water infrastructure, regulatory support for water and wastewater solutions. Overall, again, these companies have a history of doing well because water scarcity, environmental issues, climate change, all of these things have bolstered demand and spending in water infrastructure projects. And frankly, I don't see why going forward that wouldn't be the case as well. Now, it's not all clean, no pun intended. It's not all easy. You know, this is a 51 basis point expense ratio. It's not doing much for you. It's nearly equal weight within these tiers. It gives you good mid-cap exposure, which I like. But valuations in this area are a bit elevated. Price to book sitting about 4 times. Price to cash flow about 19 times. Price to sales about 2.75 times. Some of these names that I'm seeing here do have a little bit of elevation there. But, you know, year to date, this fund's up 10.25% for a thematic fund. Not too bad. Overall, I think it's a good theme. I think that generally speaking, the demand for water infrastructure is not going anywhere. So if you're looking to invest in it in a broad way, I think the first trust water ETF, decent way to do it. Before we head off, I want to talk a little bit about a tariff-driven cargo surge at America's busiest port. But that kind of seems to have ended now. August imports down 6.6% from July's record. That's after Los Angeles and Long Beach handled nearly 945,000 containers in August. Still strong by historical standards, but off the peak July number of over 1 million. And the port chief warned that volumes are likely to drop further into the fall. The peak of the peak is behind us, he says. And so this really is reflecting a bit of a whiplash, right? If you remember, Liberation Day, although the magnitude was not telegraphed, was telegraphed in what was going to happen. And so, with rising tariffs, there was a bit of front-running. Imports surged ahead of the deadline, only to plunge in May when the U.S. duties on China jumped to 135%. Now, they rebounded a bit in summer as the administration cut those rates, but then new tariffs were imposed after that. And so now, with uncertainty pretty high and consumer demand in question, importers are once again pulling back. The National Retail Federation data confirms the roller coaster. July and August saw near record national volumes as businesses scrambled ahead of deadlines. But outlook turns a bit sharply lower here. And so for retailers and the supply chain, that means the frantic tariff-driven surges may be giving way to a bit quieter and lighter holiday season. That concludes another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members but our free podcast downloads at Spotify and iTunes. While you're over there, please leave us a rate and review. That really helps us out. And if anything today that you heard made you think about yourself and you're saying, self, I'm not comfortable with where I stand financially, my investments, my taxes, is it all working for me? Visit us at investtalk.com. Sign up for a free portfolio review. Justin and I speak to listeners just like you each and every day, helping you make the most of your financial situation. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.